healthy isn't easy. Watching your diet, hitting the gym, avoiding stress. But a good night's rest helps boost your overall health and wellness. And it couldn't be easier. The new Sleep Number 360 Smart Bed is the only bed that effortlessly adjusts in response to both of you. The result? You wake up ready for anything. Proven quality sleep is life-changing sleep. During our Memorial Day sale, save $1,000 on the new Sleep Number 360 Special Edition Smart Bed Queen, now $1,799, only for a limited time. To learn more, go to sleepnumber.com.
Greetings, North State. Just a reminder here to be sure and tune in to Common Ground Radio Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock. You know, we have much more in common with one another than we normally recognize, but fail to see this thanks to our polarized media that deliberately divides us and demonizes the other side. Common Ground Radio is your progressive call-in talk show for the North State, right here on Radio KCNR, where we seek bipartisan agreement on many issues affecting all of us using respectful, fact-based dialogue and starting for change from the progressive side of the street.
Hey, Northern California, this is Nigel Skeet, and starting on Saturday, June 22nd at 8 a.m., I'll be hosting a new weekly California Adventure District radio show. There are so many great things happening in our region, and I'll be bringing them all to you every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. I'll have guests from our 12 surrounding counties, including Humboldt, Siskiyou, Trinity, Lassen, Mendocino, and many more. You will be able to plan for a great summer and fall right here in the California Adventure District. Join me every Saturday morning at 8 a.m.
Have you been putting off getting your colonoscopy due to COVID restrictions? Well, there's no better time than now. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, colorectal cancer screenings have declined by 86%, and as a result, up to 10,000 more deaths are projected over the next decade. With early detection, colon cancer has a 90% survival rate, and it may even be preventable with a colonoscopy. At Reading Endoscopy Center, our number one priority is the health and safety of our patients, and our center has always been committed to maintaining strict infection control and prevention protocols. Schedule your colonoscopy today by calling us at 530-246-7000 or visiting readingendoscopy.com. Visit readingendoscopy.com.
My name's Nick Gardner. I have a show here on KCNR, Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. every other Sunday. The name of my show is Poke the Hornet's Nest.
There's no mountain I can't climb. There's no tower too high. No plane that I can't learn how to fly. What do I gotta do to get through to you to show you there ain't nothing I can't take this chainsaw to?
I'm going to concentrate on local politics mainly, but we'll talk about national politics also. You'll get the view of the common citizen here in Redding, California. And remember, today is the first day of the rest of your life. Maybe it's a good time for a new perspective about what's been going on in our town, in our state, in our nation. I hope you tune in and hear the other side of the news.
Everybody, listen up! I expect it to be a lot easier.
I didn't know what step to take next.
I was transitioning from the military. I was a vehicle gunner.
An avionics specialist.
I missed my unit, my family.
Playing with my daughter, I'd felt like a stranger.
I didn't have a clear sense of what to do next.
And then I thought, if I'm going through this, other veterans have gone through it too, right? So I reached out, and I saw that I wasn't alone.
Go to maketheconnection.net to learn how other veterans have overcome the challenges of transitioning out of the military.
The Backbone Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. The Backbone Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Tobacco and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
North State Now is a magazine formatted show at 6 p.m. every Thursday night. The first Thursday is yours truly, Linda Bott, featuring what's going on in our town. The second Thursday is hosted by Michelle Slade, featuring heroes of the North State. The third Thursday is hosted by none other than James Masada and Rhonda Alvey from Enjoy the Magazine and Enjoy the Store. Our newest edition is the fourth Thursday of the month, Women of Vision. That's North State Now, Thursday at 6 p.m., also streaming on KCNR1460.com.
100 years ago, Simpson University began with the promise to be the gateway to world service. 30 years ago, we moved to Reading with the promise to serve the North State, graduating professionals who live and serve our growing community. Building on our foundational promise to educate ministers and missionaries, Simpson University now offers over 20 degree programs. Learn more about Reading's hometown university at simpsonu.edu.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Hi, I'm Arielle Winter. If you're anything like me, your pets are not only your best friends, they're part of your family. American Humane, which has been rescuing animals like Cleo here for more than 100 years, has life-saving tips that can make a big difference in a disaster. When disaster strikes, you want to protect your whole family, including your pets. To help keep your family safe and help our best friends in their worst times, find tips at AmericanHumane.org.
KCNR, 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at AM1460.com. Don't miss Free Fire Radio weekday mornings from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bott. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, the conscience of the nation. From noon to 3, find your financial peace with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday night, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal to riding routes, pop culture, and unsung heroes in the North State. From 7 to 10, tune into Ben Shapiro with an expanded program that brings the issues of the day to your radio. KCNR also has an incredible weekend lineup, including The Flatline, Jefferson State of Mind, Sovereign Minds, and We the People on KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at KCNR1460.com.
Remodeled kitchen, bathroom, or backyard patio? There's a lot of choices, but only one leader, Estate Granite.
Mike Huber has such a professional attitude and a can-do work ethic that makes him a joy to work with. Mike and his crew worked to have our new kitchen finished in 5 days. We came back to a true work of art.
Hi, this is Brian Salato, broker and co-owner of the Real Estate Group. In today's competitive market, I think what's important is that the house is dialed in and turnkey. And what's important is that the kitchen has been renovated, the bathrooms have been renovated, granite, beautiful cabinetry. Those things make a significant difference.
Mike at Estate Granite has an eye for detail, an attention to perfection, and a quality build crew that are masters of their craft. Mike was there from start to finish.
Hi, this is Mike from Estate Granite. I know how important quality to a homeowner is, so give me a call at 241-STONE or come by our showroom at 4900 Mountain Lakes Boulevard or visit us at EstateGranite.com.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coach Metro has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Did the Redding summer heat put a toll on your vehicle? Is your paint faded, peeling, or even scratched up? It'll get worse faster than you think. You may think it's way too expensive to have painted. Well, think again. You can bring it to Maaco here in Redding and get a professional paint job and save big with their $4.99 special. Maaco also has interest-free loans for up to a year OAC. Maaco, America's Body Shop, 3045 Crossroads Drive. Uh-oh. Better call Maaco, 226-0992. Have you been involved in a minor accident and find it's not big enough to go through your insurance company? Bring it to Maaco and get it fixed at a fraction of the cost. Remember, it's your choice where you go to have your vehicle repaired. Call Maaco for uncompromised quality, quick turnaround times, and all work backed by the National Maaco Warranty. Maaco, America's Body Shop. Stop in at 3045 Crossroads Drive or call 226-0992. Uh-oh. Better call Maaco, 226-0992.
Hi, this is Brian Martin, General Manager of River Common Senior Living. One of the most rewarding things about what I do is watching the positive transformation that often occurs when a senior moves here to our beautiful, independent retirement community. Seniors can become isolated, find it hard to eat good, healthy meals, and even just get around. I call this a failure to thrive. At River Commons, we solve those challenges. You are surrounded by friendly people with similar life experiences. Chef Shalisa and her crew provide three delicious and healthy meals daily. Activities Director Ernie always has a wide variety of things to do, from arts and crafts to outings on our 25-passenger bus. Plus, we provide utilities, cable TV, scheduled transportation, weekly housekeeping, and more. We see seniors go from survive to thrive, and that is just a wonderful thing. Call today for a tour or luncheon a tour and experience River Commons for yourself. 221-2121 or on the web river-commons.com.
Metaphors have a way of holding the most truth in the least space. Orson Scott Card.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Today we are talking about the use of similes and metaphors in writing. Before we do that, though, we want to remind you that we are doing a NaNoWriMo giveaway, so if you are participating, head to our website. On the very front page, on the right-hand side, you'll find a link to get more information about how to join us and enter to win copies of our books and some Writing Roots merch.
So similes and metaphors are one of those things that I, as an author and as a human being, have kicked and screamed at and stomped my feet and hated basically my entire life. I am a literalist. Anyone who knows me outside of this podcast can tell you that I will always interpret word for word exactly what you mean before I understand anything outside of that. So if he is a dog, I think he's got ears and a tail.
Translates very literally when we're speaking to Lee. Which is funny because I think you use more metaphors in your writing than I do.
A lot of that is because I'm trying to convey physical movement in a way that makes sense and doesn't come across technical. If he's blocking a punch with both hands, swiping across in like a double windmill kind of thing, that doesn't make nearly as much sense as he swiped both of his hands across his vision like windshield wipers. Okay, you've got a clear image of what that looks like.
So that is one of the uses of similes and metaphors. In one line, you can convey an idea in a shorter amount of time than it would take to explain it literally.
So what is a simile? What is a metaphor?
A simile is a direct comparison. You use like or as. An example of a simile: She dipped the cookie in the coffee like a young boy might dip his toe into a lake before his first swim.
She's doing this like someone would do that. That is the key difference between a simile and a metaphor.
Metaphors will do the comparison as if it were real. So his arms were windshield wipers swiping across his vision, instead of his arms were like windshield wipers swiping across his vision.
And of course, this is the one I struggle with because I'm thinking he now has windshield wipers attached at the elbows. Not literally, but my first image of that moment is this.
And it all depends on your readers. There are very few people out there as literal as Lee. So you're usually good to go with similes, with metaphors, in the right scenarios.
And when you choose to use them, when you choose to apply this particular tool, is very indicative of your writing style. A lot of the authors that I follow, that I enjoy, are very literal. And if Lee Child suddenly started being very flowery in his writing, with lots of similes and metaphors, I would lose my interest in him as an author.
So there are a couple of times when the metaphor is more than just a single line or a single sentence or a single word.
If you are using more than one metaphor in your scene, they should connect in some way. Her blood turned to ice at the sight of the giant. Her blood thawed and then began to boil when the giant stepped on her sister. Maintaining that continuity between metaphors, at least within the same scene, helps understand. If you hop between metaphors, it gets very messy and very difficult to follow what you're doing, and it feels flowery. You're not in that moment.
And then, beyond just the scenes, sometimes the entire book can be a metaphor itself. This is most often seen in your literature kind of stories, your novels that were written as a lesson or later on interpreted as a lesson for mankind.
The first time I really recognized this part about myself was when we were assigned to read Metamorphosis by Kafka, where the guy, as a teenager, as I recall, turns into a beetle. It was like a metaphor for puberty and changing into something weird and new. I'm going, no, the kid turned into a beetle. That's what the book said.
This is also very popular, not just in the English lit genre, but in the softer fiction genres, especially Christian, where you have allegories. One really good example of this is The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. It's an entire representation of Christian values.
A lot of these types of stories are meant to offer something to the reader, and it's up to the reader to ingest and interpret and therefore participate in the storytelling process, because that's what this means to me. This is a lot more of the artistic writing and less of the entertainment writing. This is also a great tool to relate to your readers in what is an abnormal situation for the characters. So if they're casting a spell, an invisibility spell, I drop it on your head, bloop. Okay, we can kind of visually see that because we've seen that in a bunch of TV shows. But the fairy tapped her on the head and then it felt like an egg had been broken and it was gooing through her hair as it dripped down over her entire body. Okay. We have a better idea of the speed, of the temperature, of the goo.
It gives us the sensory details of this moment that would be lost otherwise. Metaphors can also be used as a way to define a character. One of my favorite examples is from Brandon Sanderson's Reckoners series. He has a character who is constantly using similes, calling them metaphors, and they are so bad, but it's purposeful, and it is that character. It is so defining for that character.
If you have a character who is speaking in similes and metaphors, then you need to make sure they're basically the only character who does it. normal people, and I'm not talking about writers, I'm talking about normal people, rarely speak in similes and metaphors.
And people do use metaphors, but they're common metaphors. Like, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. These are things, we're not literally going to go to a bridge and cross the bridge. We're not literally going to go burn a bridge. But these are common metaphors that we use all of the time. So a lot of what we've been talking about is serious uses for similes and metaphors. Similes and metaphors can be very comedic. Like in the Reckoner series, I'm going to read a quote from it because it's amazing. But even a 90-year-old blind priest would stop and stare at this woman. If he weren't blind, that is. Dumb metaphor, I thought. I'll have to work on that one. I have trouble with metaphors. So it's ridiculous, it's fun, but it's in the right place, and he is the only character that does this, that comes up with the most absurd things. So it's defining for him. It's a fun moment for the reader to connect with a character. Because how many times do we come up with saying something and then realize, well, that was dumb, and then try to move on from it? Another way to use metaphors as comedy is to use malaphors. So I mentioned earlier the you burned that bridge, and we'll cross that bridge when you come to it. You can also say, we'll burn that bridge when we come to it. That's a malaphor. It's a mixing of metaphors in a comedic way.
And of course, if you have your laptop in front of you and are just looking for a giggle, looking up metaphors by high school students can be hilarious.
The little boat gently drifted across the pond exactly the way a bowling ball wouldn't.
Murphy fell 12 stories, hitting the pavement like a hefty bag filled with vegetable soup.
It's so visual. And maybe appropriate in the right setting, but man, in the wrong setting with the wrong timing, that is a terrible metaphor.
I love it. So learning similes and metaphors is something you have to kind of learn about your own writing style. This is something you'll start to notice as you read more in your genre, what works and what doesn't. And what you like and what you don't like. Is it adding to the scene or is it just redefining the scene? If you're just redefining, you're wasting time because it can distract, but it can also add so much. Those undefinable moments, those emotions that we don't have words for, similes and metaphors are great for drawing your reader into that emotion.
That's the goal of any writer. Get the readers emotionally invested in your story, connected. And if everything is super literal, it's hard to get that emotional connection. Or it just takes forever because you're spending so much time trying to explain one motion, one movement, one feeling. You don't want to have that distance. And so consider using similes and metaphors, but make sure it's right for your genre. Make sure it's right for you. And if you're like Lee and you don't think in similes and metaphors, go ahead and stick with being literal. That's fine, because what you should be doing is
writing selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Very often we write down a sentence too early, then another too late. What we have to do is to write it down at the proper time. Otherwise, it's lost. Thomas Bernard.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
Happy NaNoWriMo!
Woo-hoo!
We are the second day into November. I hope you've started your process to achieving your NaNoWriMo goals. To give you a little bit of motivation, we are doing a month-long giveaway.
You've heard us talk about the merchandise of Write Selfishly on a t-shirt and on mugs and that kind of thing.
Now on masks.
These will be what we're giving away at the end. We will do a drawing on our Facebook page.
So what you need to do to be entered into the giveaway is to like our Facebook page and then find one of us on NaNoWriMo website. We will include links to this on Facebook on the landing page of this episode, and in the About Me section on our website.
And then every day that you hit your word goal, you'll be entered into this drawing for the end of the month.
Just send us a message on NaNo saying, hey, I'm entering your giveaway, and we will keep an eye on the goals that you enter into the NaNo website.
This is simply meant to be motivation to get you to be writing your book.
For me personally, NaNo means a lot. I did the Camp July NaNo, and that's what ended with me having a finished book. That's what ended with me having Toxic be able to release and publish to help celebrate that. We are going to include copies of our books in this giveaway.
Our goal for this month is to give you kind of tricks of the trade, little things to keep in your arsenal when you're stuck. These little tricks will help you move your story forward. That is the purpose of this month. So the first thing we're talking about is writing right now. So Lee, what is the biggest thing that holds you back from writing?
Perfectionism. When I hear the phrase writing right now, all I hear is writing right. I say I want it to be right the first time. I have to write it right the first time. And I don't track the right now part of it. Because when we say write it right now, we don't mean it has to be perfect right now. We mean just get it written right now.
When we are talking about your NaNoWriMo word count goals, we don't mean 1,667 perfect words. We mean 1,667 words that have been written. It's far more important to write it right now than to write it right.
Because there is no right way to write, especially on a first draft. Word vomit if you have to just get it on the page. And that is the first trick of the trade. Just write something. You also want to avoid asking yourself certain questions while you are writing.
And I know this from experience. I built this list because I've asked myself these questions so many times, and every time it grinds my writing process to a halt.
Question number one, does this make sense?
You are not writing selfishly if you're asking yourself that question. You are thinking about your audience during your first draft. Does it make sense to you enough to when you can look back on it and polish it later?
Fix it in post.
Another question that I find grinds me to a halt is, what is the perfect word for this moment?
Throw in a filler word that you wouldn't use anywhere else in the story. Throw in brackets. Throw in an excessive amount of asterisks. Something that you remember that you can control F, find, and change later, so you aren't getting stuck on one word. Do not let one word derail your train.
Yeah, just keep moving and trust the editing process. If you have an idea of what happens next, write it. Don't let anything stand in your way.
Another question is a question of, is this redundant or is this just completely out of the blue? Is this continuitous? I don't know if that's a real word, but I'm using it.
it's a filler word that we'll fix in post. All you're doing at that point is just chewing through your writing time. Time is especially precious during this month because you have a lot to do in very little time. If you are rereading anything else, you are not moving forward. Just physics, you can't be doing both at once. So, best guess, I think I spelled her name with two N's and not one. We'll go with it and move on. The last question that I find myself stopping myself from writing is, have I spent enough time on this? Do I need to dwell in this moment a little bit longer? Or do I need to push forward, move past this, hurry up, instead of enjoying the moments as I write them? This is often, for me, a concern about word count, because I know my target word count for the book, and I want certain things to happen a third of the way in, two-thirds of the way in. When we're changing these acts, I need to get to this point by the time I hit 30,000 words.
This is one thing that I struggled with in July when I was writing Toxic. I got to the middle and realized I didn't have enough stuff in the middle. And I worried about that. I was like, do I need to add things? Do I need to add scenes? And then I don't remember what it was, but I finally realized if I need to add scenes, I will add it later. Let me just keep moving so I can get this written before midnight on July 31st.
For the record, if you know something is wrong, don't stop your thought process, don't stop the pen, but if you know this is not the right word and I need to fix it later, I always circle it with my pen. That's what works for me.
I use Google Docs, so if I have a thing that I know I need to change, I'll just go and highlight it. So I found myself when I was writing Toxic, going through hitting a spot where I realized, hey, this other thing needs to happen earlier for this scene to flow right. So I would do a quick search, find that scene it needs to change, highlight, comment saying, this needs to happen, and then went immediately back to where I was to continue writing. And it was just enough for me to say, okay, when I hit this in editing, then I can say, all right, let's add this, let's fix this. But it didn't distract me for more than 5 seconds.
All you're doing is putting a post-it down for yourself.
Exactly.
If you don't do this,
I would have forgotten a lot of what I needed to change.
So this concept of writing right now looks different for you plotters versus you pantsers out there.
As a pantser, it feels like there's a lot more pressure because we work so much on inspiration. We work so much with needing the muse to strike for us to work. So we sit down, we think we know where we're going. You stare at that page and your mind just goes blank. I know this. I've been there. And I'm really sorry for all you pantsers out there. I'm going to suggest probably the worst thing that all of us have to come to grips with eventually. You have to work sometimes without inspiration. You have to write down ideas as they come. Whenever that is, whether you're writing or not. And this may look a lot like an outline, but trust me, it helps. Also, stop mid-sentence. If you just start reading that sentence, it can do a lot to help you find your flow again.
Plotters, you aren't safe from this either. If you're like me, you are interested in the story because you feel like the story needs to be told. You know where you're going with it. You know what's going to happen when. And so the joy of discovering the story, of responding to the characters, can be a little lost. So make sure you don't over-outline, especially for NaNoWriMo, because then you lose enthusiasm. Last year, I switched projects mid-Nano because I had one that I was really enthusiastic for, but I didn't know where I was going with it. I'm like, let's go find, see what happens. And now the other one is published.
So, what are you waiting for? You're already on the second day of November. Get to work. Start writing. What is stopping you from writing that next scene?
Make sure your family knows, hey, from 4 to 8 in the morning, every morning, I'm going to be writing. Don't try to call me. don't try to come in and ask for waffles. I will punt you out of the room if you try to interrupt me.
I am checked out for this time so I can reach my goal. If what's stopping you is you're not sure what's next, what is the next thing you know is going to happen? What needs to happen for that to occur? And what needs to happen for that to occur? Work your way backwards until you get to the point in your story where you're stuck. And then write. And if you have to, if you are sitting there staring at a blank page, skip whatever is holding you back, jump to the good parts, and get into it. Just get those words down.
I find that when I skip ahead, I'm skipping stuff that I would have edited out anyway. So I'm not wasting my time and wasting the reader's time and then going, well, the reader needs to know this. Skip ahead, integrate it where you need to, move on. Leaving question marks in your character's backstory, in the world, blank edges of the map, things like this can be helpful in keeping your flow going. Because if you don't know, the reader probably doesn't need to know right away. So it's okay to have question marks. Be thinking about those not during your writing time, if you feel like they need to be fleshed out. But the most important thing is to always
write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
Magic happens between the notes. Linda Bott.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Hull.
And I'm Lee Esses.
And joining us today is Linda Bott. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, guys.
So we wanted to give you, our listeners, an idea of what it's like to be on stage, to be performing in front of a bunch of different people. So I dragged Linda Bott in because she's done this since you were a kid, right?
Yes. I professionally started working at 15.
Wow.
So I could say that's when I first started getting paid. But I have been singing, you know, basically growing up in the country where you've got horses and trees and the creativity of what it is to have imaginary friends and audiences. And, I was the most famous person living in the country.
Yeah. Wow.
So, tell us about how you got your start. What exactly is it that you do?
I was basically just naturally, I think, gifted in the fact that I have a good ear and that my parents belong to Capitol Records. And one of the albums was Barbra Streisand. My brother to this day can't stand listening to anything Barbra Streisand because I emulated every single intonation and tone and breath. And so she basically was my voice teacher. And I learned how to hold my breath and have these big tones. And so that's what I do is I sing. And then down the road, you know, that meant jingles, that meant recording, that meant, okay, do you want to be in this show? You have to learn these lines. Okay, can you dance? So I kind of did the acting, singing, and dancing and did some stage plays and was in a couple theatrical productions in high school and doing stuff like that.
I think the first time I met you was on the local stage here. I was working behind the scenes and helping get set pieces up and on. and it was a Christmas show.
Are you talking Martinis with Santa?
Yes.
I wrote that show and produced that show. So that was a really big undertaking for me because I had written a song with one of my Nashville buddies named Cam King, and we wrote the song Martinis with Santa. And I, okay, now what am I going to do with this song? I recorded it a few times in different albums that I have produced and actually released. Besides trying to fill the seats, making sure the seats were filled, it was just a glorious experience.
So you are a stage performer, you are a singer. A lot of people have a very specific image in mind when they think of someone who's a performing artist. They think about actors, actresses, the glamour, the flashing cameras. They think about Broadway and all of the...
Jazz hands?
Jazz hands.
Literal jazz hands.
I don't know. So that's interesting because I think we all see the world through our own personal lens. Mm-hmm. So I would say that, first of all, it's a craft. There's a lot of grunt work involved in what it is. People just think you just roll out of bed and you have no idea the grunt work that goes into performing and what it is to, it's a lot of energy to put on high heels and put on clothes. And when you're hungry, you'll take any job. I used to say to my agent, just give me the Ramada Inn, I'll take a piano bar for $30. And that's the truth.
So if you could embed an idea into our audience's mind of what you do, what would it be?
I connect with people. I try to please people. It's an energy for me to feed people, but it also feeds me. So I feel like when I feed them, they feed me. It's a cycle. It's an energy circle.
What kind of mindset do you need to have to do what you do?
Well, I would say a lot of entertainers are very insecure. They need to have the acknowledgement, but ultimately the redemption. There's like a, oh yeah, you think because I'm tall and I'm blonde, I can't belt out a note, I don't have a brain. That has always been great for me to go like, as soon as you open your mouth, people are like, what? So what does it take? It takes a lot of chutzpah. It takes a lot of going through doors when people say, no, you can't do that. Well, watch me. You know, again, I heard another interview recently of Kelly Clarkson that said, you tell me no, and I'm going to show you how good I can do it. You know, you have to believe in yourself because there's constant people who are going to tear you down and say things or, you know, you may be thinking you're saying the word pink and somebody says, look at how she says the word pink. I mean, that's such a weird analogy, but it's true. Does that make sense? So you have to develop thick skin because you're told 9 no's for 1 yes, no matter how good you are.
So think of your very first live performance to your very last live performance. What is the difference between how you feel before stepping on that stage?
When I think about my first really live performance, it would have been like in seventh grade with the jazz band and being body conscious, not sure of my energy, not sure of myself. And now at this age, I'm just, hey, you know what? I've got 3 different dress sizes in my closet and I'm going to be who I am today in this moment. And I don't know what's going to come out. I'm prepared, but you know, I remember this time like 4 years ago in the same place I was supposed to be performing and they canceled the outside performance and put me upstairs. Talk about pulling out all of my shtick because I was inside now in a very small room. So yeah, I was upstairs and I remember it was summer like this. The fires had been raging. I said to the people putting on this event, do you really want people to sit outside in the smoke? That was just really an interesting night. It was fun, but boy, I had to do some sing-alongs. And I don't know about this stage of my life. I'm not really interested in sing-alongs. It felt like we were going to do the hokey pokey next.
So what is it like backstage?
There's a variety of different elements to backstage. Backstage could even be a coat closet because trust me, I have oftentimes had my dressing room be a coat closet where I brought my own light and my own mirror. Just some place to change costumes into having the real backstage like in Las Vegas where you do have the chaotic dressing room, fresh flowers on the table, a piano where you do your scales before you hit the stage or your if you're with a group, you're harmonizing so you can pitch in before you hit the stage. So it's a variety of different things. Now, like this jazz gig coming up, it's going to be outside. So my stage will be the car before I get out there and say, okay, I'm ready, guys. Let me schlep. When am I going to schlep the microphone and the PA system? Tell me what I need to do. You can't have an ego when it comes to that. You just got to pull up your big girl panties and you get out there and let it rip.
Is there anyone in particular that you think has really changed the industry of performance?
Well, recently I saw Lady Gaga, and it rocked my world. Her audience had gay, straight, grandmas, every color of the rainbow, every generation, and everybody partied. And I love that. I really love that. I mean, Cher does that too. People who I think really changed a lot of genre bending are people like Dolly Parton. My former drummer in Nashville toured with her, so I got a chance to go backstage and meet her. And she was so real. I was like, I'm taking your time. I don't want to take this picture. And she goes, come back here, honey. You didn't get a good picture. So I took another picture, and I was thinking, oh, my gosh. And she was as real as the day comes. I don't think that woman has a fake bone in her body. So she's very prolific. And my drummer, Chuck, who's then her drummer and everybody else's drummer, had said that when you go on the road with her, expect a phone call at 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and she's going to be talking, what do you think about this line? And she's constantly writing. And so I think that she's been somebody who really inspired me as far as how long she's been around, and she's covered every genre and written books on top of it.
Do you have any final advice for an author who wants to write a performer in their book?
I would think about the words that I had said earlier that would be self-image, insecure, knowing it, growing it, ego. Yeah. Also going through your fears and developing more of the character as far as finding their apex or their zenith.
Is there any industry lingo that you can kind of define for them so they can use it for their character?
Wardrobe malfunction. Go on with the show, no matter what. Staying in pitch even when the band is playing in the wrong key. Not letting the hecklers make a joke with them, but don't let them disrupt you. Because there's always going to be somebody or something behind you on stage falling. Just malfunctions or mistakes. And you must go on with the show. If I were to mentor somebody or teach them, is that just remember that the magic happens between the beats. It happens between the notes. So many times before even going into a song with the intro, this is what I love about jazz and interpretation, is that I can take my time and I can look at the players and say, I'm not ready yet. And they know if they read my body, we're going to go around one more time, or you're going to watch my shoulder and I'll go in. So that's the same thing with the magic happens between the notes.
All right. Well, thank you to all of our listeners. Remember, if you're writing characters, make sure you find the right sources for how they really can be represented correctly through their books. And as you write, remember what we always tell you.
Write selfishly.
If you have a question or comment for our hosts or a topic you'd like us to cover, send us an email at writingroots@aspenhousepublishing.com or find us on Facebook by searching for Aspen House Publishing.
The Backo and Brew, located at 2143 Hilltop Drive, has been an integral part of our community for over 40 years. They have supported the veterans, law enforcement, fire and disaster survivors throughout this whole time. The Backo and Brew has expanded their walk-in humidor and brought to the North State new lines of fine cigars, pipes, and tobacco products. Additionally, they are offering a pipe bar to try out new tobacco for taste and aroma. Backo and Brew is your one-stop shop for any tobacco product and accessories to include lighters, humidors, pouches, and more. Backo and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
I will put you, the writer, behind the wheel of the squad car, walking a beat, investigating crime scenes, and sitting behind a desk writing reports. So, put on your Sam Brown belt, strap on your vest, and let's go experience what cops do and learn why they do it. Patrick O'Donnell.
You're listening to Writing Roots, brought to you by Aspen House Publishing.
Welcome to Writing Roots. I'm Lee Holt.
And I'm Lee Essis.
Continuing our series with people with advanced skills, we are getting into law enforcement, a very common character in a lot of genres. So our guest today is Patrick O'Donnell. Welcome. Thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So we know you wrote this opening quote, and that came from your book, Cops and Writers. How long have you been in law enforcement?
Okay. I just retired February 21st of this year from law enforcement. I retired as a police sergeant in the city of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, after 25 years of service.
Wow.
Presently 55 years of age, so that's about typical across the nation. To give your listeners some context, Milwaukee is a city of about 600,000 people. There's about 1,800 law enforcement sworn members, which means they have arrest powers. And out of that 1,800, there was about 200 sergeants. I was one of them. I was a street sergeant, so I spent all of my career on the streets.
You wrote a book called Cops and Writers. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. The first book is Cops and Writers, From the Academy to the Streets. I'm an independently published author. That was the fourth book that I've written. I was in the middle of the second post-apocalyptic book, and I was getting deeper and deeper into the weeds in self-publishing and going to conferences, getting to know people. And inevitably, it's always, what do you do for a living? What's your day job? And I tell them, and they had just a plethora of questions. And I said, yeah, you should really just start consulting with authors, and you should be writing books about this. So I scrapped the post-apocalyptic book, and I wrote this book. I also started a Facebook group to see if there was interest in it before I invested too much time or money into this project. And the results were fantastic. People were very open to it. I've helped a lot of writers kind of write their way through maybe some plot holes or just does that really happen kind of questions. So now I just sent off the second book in this Cops and Writers series, and that's going to be Crime Scenes and Investigations. And hopefully that'll be out in September. That's what I'm shooting for.
Oh, that is awesome. And let me just say, I am part of this Facebook group, and it is fantastic.
Well, I'm glad. That makes me very happy.
So what do you see that really works well and drives you up the wall?
Most of it doesn't work well, and most of it does drive me up a wall. My wife loves shows like, you know, Hawaii Five-O, you know, all the different spin-offs of CSI. And most of them are far, far from reality. You know, it's entertainment. I guess it's not very exciting to watch a cop or a detective do 8 hours or 10 hours worth of reports after a 5-minute chase. And that's the reality of it. There was one TV show that I thought was pretty spot on, and that was Southland. What I liked about that show was it got the gallows sense of humor. It got the banter between the cops. And it really showed the human side of things that a lot of TV shows and movies, you know, it seems like it's one extreme or another. Some of the things that really drives me crazy is most of police work that's done, that's exciting, quote unquote, is done by police officers on the street. It's not detectives. Detectives usually show up after the fact. This is funny. We tease them sometimes. We used to call them third responders. But no, you decide to show up. That's nice. But the breaking down the doors, the car chases, the stuff that gets notoriety and the highest amount of liability are the first responders, the cops on the street. Say like a homicide detective. You see that a lot on TV and in movies. They respond when there's somebody that just committed a homicide. Sometimes that could be a half an hour to an hour after the police officers show up on the scene. Then a sergeant's going to show up on the scene. That's what I did. And you quickly try to maintain control of the crime scene. You set up a perimeter. That's when the yellow tape goes up that everybody is familiar with.
If there is one concept that you could make everyone understand about law enforcement, what would it be?
I would try to humanize it as much as possible. Police officers, detectives, sergeants, lieutenants, captains, etc., they're all human beings, and we're all flawed. I think they do a fabulous job, and literally you have under a second to make sometimes life and death decisions, and I can't think of any other job that's like that. They're human beings. They're professionals. They are flawed. There's all kinds of problems, just like anybody else. It's funny because law enforcement's a melting pot. You have people from every kind of walk of life you can think of that becomes a cop, and use that.
You mentioned earlier the gallows humor of a lot of that type of environment. What other types of speech, lingo or whatever, can people embed in their stories that would be accurate to the law enforcement profession?
Oh, boy. The gallows humor is a big one. I would be careful as far as...
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.